We have that little lady that we love so much that nobody knows her, but you love her anyway. Oh, what is your name, Anna?
Wendy.
Wendy Lindy. Now, this is one of my favorite people in all the world. And I know she is yours, too, and it's not because you don't know her. She is absolutely a delightful angel on earth, and she's our Lindy.
So my mother went to a self-esteem workshop when she was in her 60s. And she learned that she could diffuse a confrontational situation by saying to the other person, "You might be right." She said, "I'd be a better person if I'd learned this 20 years earlier." I said, "You might be right." I never heard my mother say it again, interestingly enough. But it changed my life, for real. I used to be the person who was always right, not because I needed to be, but because I was. Some people just are. But seriously, it brought me into the realm of reality, and my friends stopped going, "Oh, Lindy, stop it." You know, they kept putting up with me, even though I said things like, "It's second star to the right and straight on till morning, not first star." Or, "It's Betelgeuse on Orion's right shoulder, not his left shoulder." And things like that. And the name of Alexander the Great's horse is Bucephalus. Many of the pieces of information that I knew back in those days were completely irrelevant. And they still are.
You might be right. No.
Good one, George. Yeah, you can see how this works. It can change, it can totally transform your life. Carlos Castaneda said, "We either make ourselves miserable or we make ourselves strong. The amount of work is the same." So we have the opportunity to allow that others are right and change ourselves into being strong instead of being miserable because we think we're right and we're not. Now, "You might be right" is what I choose to call tonight, for the purposes of this talk at least, a transformational mantra. You can call it an affirmation. You can call it something you should say when the circumstances fit, something you whisper to yourself in your head when you're thinking about it in a conversation with somebody who's being confrontational. I'm learning lots about transformational mantras in a course of study I'm taking called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction at the Scripps Center for Integrative Medicine. Yeah, that's a mouthful. I call it SCIM, S-C-I-M. And they call the program MBSR, Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction. So I go up every Tuesday afternoon to SCIM for MBSR. And I come home a different person. Before I start talking about transformational mantras, though, that I've learned, I want to say a little bit more about mindfulness. From Wikipedia, mindfulness is a psychological concept is the focusing of attention and awareness based on the concept of mindfulness in Buddhist meditation. It was popularized in the West starting in 1978 by Jon Kabat-Zinn. And although it's not, it has its roots in Buddhism, it's not singular to any particular religion, because it's not a religion, it's a practice. Several definitions of mindfulness have been used in modern psychology, including bringing one's complete attention to the present experience on a moment-to-moment basis, paying attention in a particular way on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally, a kind of non-elaborative, non-judgmental, present-centered awareness in which each thought, feeling, or sensation that agrees in the attentional field is acknowledged and accepted as it is. Mm-hmm. One would have to be far from mindful to get these definitions. Basically, it comes down to two things. One, recognition of what is. And two, being in it now. Pretty simple. Wikipedia goes on for pages and pages and pages. You know, we all know how to make ourselves miserable. In the Carlos Castaneda quotation, we all spend a lot of our energy and time and money making ourselves miserable. But I figure getting up in the morning pretty much guarantees it anyway, so why not? There is a country song that applies to this particular topic. Shania Twain. Everybody knows this one, right? Honey, I'm home. The car won't start, it's falling apart. I'm late for work and the boss got smart. My panty line shows, got a run in my hose. My hair went flat. Man, I hate that. Just when I thought things couldn't get worse, I realized I forgot my purse. With all this stress, I must confess, this could be worse than PMS. Honey, I'm home and I've had a hard day. Pour me a cold one. And oh, by the way, rub my feet. Give me something to eat. Fix me up my favorite treat. Honey, I'm back. My head's killing me. I need to relax and watch TV. Get off the phone. Give the dog a bone. Honey, I'm home. That pretty much says it all. If I had someone to get off the phone, to give the dog a bone, to complain to, I'd be a much better complainer. More accomplished, not of longer duration. I do that now. But I could be a much more accomplished complainer had I had someone to live in and to deserve all that grief. But seriously, is being miserable, let's say that in the spirit of mindfulness we recognize that where we are is miserable. Recognize what is. It's miserable. Allow it to be okay. Here. To be here. Now. Why do I have to let miserable be okay here and now? Well, I don't. And one technique that I can use to avoid misery is to recognize that misery is gathering in its hordes around me. And think of a fish. You're swimming in a lake, let's say, and there are lots of fishermen fishing in that lake. So there are lots of tiny, tempting morsels of fish bait on hooks that are hidden behind the fish bait, and which if I don't pay attention, I'm going to nibble on and get caught hooked. Or I could be a discerning fish and pass up those obviously devious hooks hidden in delicious fish bait. So anytime somebody starts something, or the possibility exists that something will start to make me more miserable, I can become aware that I'm in this fish pond and I can choose to take the bait or not. And I can say to myself when, for example, when my mother was alive, when the phone would ring and it would have my mother's number on it, I could say to myself, hook. Looks pretty tasty, but I know what's inside of it. So, I mean, if you can pause for 2 seconds and realize that there's a hook there, sometimes you can manage to not bite it and not swallow it and not get jerked into it. Hook. Transformational mantra, if you will. When a friend wants to spiral down into negativity and wants to take you with them, that's the moment to say hook. You're not just mindless, you're actually mindful of what's happening. And that makes choice possible in that moment. You can choose not to pick up the phone and have it go to voicemail. When is your mother calling? Or you can choose to adjust your attitude before you pick up the phone, so that she doesn't get a hook also. Hook. Okay? The next instance, agree to something you didn't want to do, like making 3 dozen cupcakes for your first grade daughter's class on less than 24 hours notice. That's going to make you pretty mad, isn't it? Not only is that a hook, but it's an opportunity to be to be yourself, to follow your truth and say no, or to sell your soul and say yes, and be resentful afterward. Brené Brown, in one of her famous books, Daring Greatly or The Power of Imperfection, says, choose discomfort over resentment. You have 30 seconds of no discomfort, or you have months of yes resentment. You make the call. It's a choice. And my point in most of what I'm talking about tonight is that we have choices. Choose discomfort over resentment. Try reversing the yes that you're feeling compelled to give and give the no that you desperately want to give and see how that feels. Okay, it might be a little queasy in the moment, but after you said it, aren't you glad you did? And you will have a better relationship with a person who's asking you to do things you know you don't want to do by telling them no when you need to instead of telling them yes when you don't want to. So in the interests of friendship, choose discomfort over resentment. Now, we're always telling ourselves stories. What if the story we're telling isn't serving us anymore? We keep telling it anyway, don't we? Well, I do. I can't speak for the rest of you. I resented Rohr for laying me off in 1995. And I told myself that story. Oh, the big bad company laid me off. And then I realized that was just keeping me stuck at Rohr, where, by the way, 18 years later, I'm happily retired from Rohr. But I told myself I was a victim of the mega layoffs. Rohr in Chula Vista used to have 13,000 employees, and they laid off down to 2,500. So not only was I not the only victim, I wasn't even the biggest victim. I didn't have a family. I didn't have a mortgage. My landlord lowered my rent because they wanted to keep me. It was cheaper for them to lower my rent while I was unemployed than it was for them to hire, to advertise and clean and paint and find another tenant. I was lucky. When I stopped telling myself a story of negativity, I got a temp job as office manager for Wilson Racquetball, which was one of the jobs I've loved the most in my entire life. They were moving their offices to Chicago, and I got to spend the last 6 months in San Diego closing the office and dealing with bad rackets and bad racquetballs. And good ones, too, of course. Yeah. So what's the mantra? This is a story that doesn't need to be told right now. Doesn't need to happen. I don't need to be telling this story anymore because it doesn't serve me. I can transform this into a healing story instead of a victim story by telling the part about finding the temp job instead of focusing on the part about being laid off. So I can make I got laid off, oh, poor me, into I had a great temp job with Wilson Racquetball. That's a much happier story. It's a choice. Do I want to stay in the victimhood or do I want to tell a positive story? Now, this is pretty loosely organized, as you will see, but there are three types of awareness that thoughts and body sensations and senses, those are the three types. So we all have thoughts, body sensations, and senses. And it's the attention that we pay to those that give us our mindfulness, meat and potatoes. It's not wrong to be thinking while you're being mindful. Mindfulness is just thinking with conscious thought, not being lost in thought. There are also three types of thoughts. Pleasant, we all know those. Pleasant thought, oh my goodness, a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream. Unpleasant, we all know those. Unpleasant thought, I can't come up with one, but I'm sure you can. Just kidding. I'll gain weight if I eat that pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream. Unpleasant thought. Neutral thoughts, which have no pleasant or unpleasant weight to them. They're just neutral. There is a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream in the grocery store. I don't own it. I'm not going to eat it. I'm not going to prevent myself from eating it. It just is neutral. Now, what does this have to do with anything? She said. William James said, our greatest strength in reducing our stress is our ability to choose one thought over another. That's what I'm talking about, choice, choosing one thought over another. And being mindful gives us the freedom to choose. Pema Chodron, who's a mindfulness practitioner, says, let the difficulties and suffering in our lives be an invitation to become more open, wise, gentle, and compassionate. Mindfulness practice is not about vanquishing our thoughts. It's about becoming aware of the presence of thinking so that we will not be entranced to it, lost inside our thoughts. Becoming interested in what's really happening right here, coming home to the sensations in your body, your breath, the sounds around you, the life of the moment. Many thoughts are driven by fear and lock us into insecurity. That was Freudian, wasn't it? I didn't want to say fear. Many thoughts are driven by fear and lock us into insecurity. This is from a book called Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach. She says, training in mindfulness allows one to have a choice. And she also says, at the moment in which you pause and realize that these thoughts are not really serving you, you have the option to come back to presence. Don't go to the thought, come back to here. In these moments when you're lost in thought, what if you could pause and say, oh, it's just a thought? As an example, I had the thought that it was difficult for me to ask for help the other day on Tuesday. I have to take eye drops 4 times a day, 2 different kinds, so that's 8 drops a day. I'm running way behind today. But I couldn't get the drops in my eye. They would go everywhere but in the eye. So I asked for help. But I struggled with the concept of asking for help, and I happened to be in mindfulness class when I asked. So the thought behind the trepidation, if you will, was I'm a deadbeat loser. I can't even put an eye drop in my own eye. Well, I realized, says Tara Brach, I don't have to believe my thoughts. Just because I think it doesn't make it true. We have such wild thoughts that are so irrelevant as to be ridiculous. So why do we believe them? When you're having strange thoughts, try saying, I realize I don't have to believe my thoughts. Just because I think it doesn't make it true. There's your transformational mantra. And even if you don't think it in the moment, if you think about it later, after you've been through this experience that caused this thought to be germinated, it's still possible to obliterate it. Because the more we utilize the positive pathways in our brain, the more we create more positive pathways. The brain can be changed physiologically by changing your thoughts. They say what's fired together wires together. Now, how to use our choice of thoughts as a tool for transformation when we don't know or like what's happening in our lives. 1, mindfulness. Recognize where we are. And 2, choose to be nuts. Oh! That's where I couldn't read my own writing, and it's really here, not nuts. Choose to be here. I swear I looked at that upside down and backwards before I figured it out. We can ask ourselves, what's happening right now? Be in the now moment, figuring out what's going on. And can I be with this right now? Only maybe for a short time, but can I be with it right now? Our instructor had a bedroom flood. The upstairs tenant's bathroom flooded her bedroom. She's not a happy camper. But she asked herself, what's happening right now? Which has an implication of, do I have any control over it or not? And can I be with it right now? Which has an implication of, who cares if I don't have control over it right now? Now, there might be a hook in there somewhere, so think about that. Somebody might just be telling you about their bathroom, bedroom flood, and then it wouldn't really be your problem. But my asking for help example was used in the class, and I said what I was feeling right now was shame. What was happening was I was afraid to ask for help because I was ashamed of being a deadbeat loser. That's cutting to the bottom line. And by going through the what's happening right now and will I be able to live with it right now, I realized what was happening, and that, yes, I could live with it because it isn't true. It's just a thought. Back to that. So when we have pleasant thoughts, our intention is to grasp, have more, cling to what the thought is about. When we have unpleasant thoughts, our probable reaction is to resist or flight, fight, freeze, be an aversion to it, one of those bad things. But resistance just causes more agony. There's an equation which is not mathematical, but stress times resistance equals, or pain times resistance equals equals suffering. That's the one where Buddha says pain is mandatory, inevitable, actually. Pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Stop resisting and be mindfully present. I use the metaphor of an ocean. We can let the little waves knock us off our feet, but we're not the waves, we're the ocean. We're greater than the sum of the parts that are causing us difficulties. So if we remind ourselves that we are the ocean, we can be the ocean, and then the waves will cease to knock us off our feet. We're bigger than the sum of our difficulties. In this choiceless, never-ending flow of life, there is an infinite array of choices. One alone brings happiness, saying yes to what is. Dorothy Hunt. And finally, taking in the good. Taking in the good is a practice that says, it's like watching for God stories is what taking in the good is, but it's on a much smaller level. It's kindliness, path, meditation. And it says, I'm going to look 3 times a day for something that is good, and I'm going to spend 20 seconds appreciating it. 20 seconds because that's how long it takes to release I can never remember this word. Patty, you would know. It's the thing that counteracts the other thing that I can't remember. Never mind. Anyway, there's some brain chemistry that's affected. No, not serotonin. It's, I don't remember it enough to be able to say if you're right or not. So let's just say that there's a brain chemistry reaction that happens when you spend 20 seconds appreciating good. And that means that you have to hold a hug for 20 seconds, which is the length of 3 long breaths. And don't let them squirm out early. But, for example, stop and smell the roses. Look at the cloud formations in the sky. Feel the sun on your cheeks. That's three examples. If you spend 60 seconds, 20 seconds on each one of them, you will have triggered the release of oxytocin. Thank you. And you'll have a happier day. And when you're doing that, when you're appreciating the good, you're thinking, oh, this is great. I love the sun on my face. You're also thinking, because it's a transformational mantra, I'm all right right now. So no matter what is going wrong in your life, for 60 seconds a day, you can be all right right now. Just by saying it when you're appreciating the good. Just by taking in the good and letting it touch you. You're rewiring your brain to find more good. Now, if you were taking notes, and of course you were, you have a laundry list of transformational tools. The bottom line of all of this, of course, is that you have choice. We can choose our thoughts. We can choose our responses. 10,000 summers in spring, the full moon in autumn, the cool breeze in summer, the glistening snow in winter. If your mind is not clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. And I wouldn't give a talk without at least one mindfulness joke, although I'm way over time. Here's a mindfulness joke where the son is, or the grandson is clear about what he wants for his grandfather. This is a joke by Stephen Wright, stand-up comedian. I was watching the Super Bowl with my 92-year-old grandfather. The team scored a touchdown. They showed the instant replay. He thought they scored another touchdown. I was going to tell him, but I figured the game he was watching was better. And Stephen Wright says, whenever I think about the past, it just brings up so many memories. And thank you for giving me this time.